It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's Labor Day weekend. Where did the summer go? Every day I'm starting to sound like more and more like my grandparents. You know, the summer goes by fast, etc. But the school season has started. My wife's a teacher at Ware, and she is, let's put it this way, back into the groove of teaching. So she's having a good week so far. And for my running friends, just want to thank you all for coming out for the 10-miler around Lake Massapequa last Saturday. And then those of you that drove up to Vermont, a few New Hampshireites, we ran up Mount Mansfield in the so-called race to the top of Vermont. But this weekend is about being mindful. And with me is Professor Anna Burrell, who is the co-author with me with Mindfulness, A Better Me, A Better You, and A Better World. And in the spirit of transparency, she has been a great professional development trainer for Northeast Delta Dental for many years, and specifically most recently in mindfulness. But there were many other topics on leadership, etc. So, Annabelle, thank you for joining me this weekend. I know you're busy, and for you,
not at all,
to spend Labor Day weekend with me, I'm honored.
Oh, I'm honored too. Great to be here.
Okay, so let's talk. Let's get right into it because it's such a robust topic.
Sure.
So, in terms of getting in mindfulness, so I kind of got involved because I was I do a lot of management by walking around, and I was kind of seeing several of our employees, you know, on their phone while doing an email, and I'm sort of worried about sort of multitasking as opposed to unitasking. And then we're named one of the best companies in New Hampshire, and sometimes I informally ask the other best companies, you know, what are they most concerned about? And a lot of the times this came up, the multitasking, the fact that all of us are trying to do, you know, more with less, and we think we're being more efficient by multitasking, and that was their major concern. And then you were already in my life, but you were already doing the mindfulness, you know, classes at Northeast Delta Dental. And so I said, we really need to get on this topic, and voila, here we are. But I know your history goes way back on mindfulness and meditation, and the spirit of transparency, the science and rigor behind the book is really the genius of Professor Burrell. I just provided sort of the pragmatic side of it in terms of how I've seen it turn around the lives of many of our employees. So with that, tell us about your history and how you got involved with it.
All right, Tom. Well, I came to the United States in 1993, having just sold my business in artificial intelligence, which I had started and run for nearly 9 years, and I was the classic burnt-out executive. I had all the trappings of success: insomnia, stomach ulcers, a lot of sort of headaches, tight body, and so on. And I actually came to attend a Jesuit seminary. And the reason for that was I found I had been losing my soul. And while I was at the Jesuit seminary, I'd always been really attracted to comparative cultures, comparative religions, because with my company, which was international, I traveled a lot. I had the opportunity to attend lectures in Buddhism, in Hinduism, in Islam, in Sufism. It was quite wonderful. And that was in between my own dabbling, that was the beginning of a more, let's say, systematic approach into learning about the contemplative traditions and actually practicing it myself. So that goes back to 93, 94, quite some years. And now I have found my own practice that sort of works for me.
So clearly this is not the flavor of the month, right, for you.
No.
That's great. And I think that's why, by the way, just for the listening audience, and you can get our book, Mindfulness, A Better Me, A Better You, A Better World, locally at Gibson's if you want to support the local bookstore, or you can go on Amazon to get it. But I know one of our goals was to make sure that we came out with a mindfulness book that was solid, based on research, practical examples. In my case, the neuroscience research, in your case, and all your experience since 1993, because we've kind of figured that other books would be coming out because it seems to be the, you know, now the topic of the day. But instead of
right.
it, we didn't want it that way. We want this to be a long-term thing. So again, thank you for working with me. Basically, you know, you took the lead on all last summer through the holidays, and the book is out there. So
it's quite amazing, isn't it, that last year this time we were delving into the book.
Exactly. And those of you that have written books, and Anne-Marie is a prolific author, and I've written one other book, it is basically, well, certainly it can be a gift for some people and a muse. I mean, it is like most things, you know, you have to practice it, hard work, and deliver this chapter on this date and edit it. And it was a fun process. And in that journey, I also learned a lot, because when I speak publicly about mindfulness, I'm sometimes the audience I'm with can be maybe some other, you know, CEOs and others that may not be believers in the practice. Although more and more as I get out there, I hear about CEOs and other leaders being involved with it. But I used to start out by saying, like, well, you don't see me walking around in earth shoes. And yes, you know, meditation is part of mindfulness, but I don't lead with that because I don't want people thinking that, you know, I've gone off the deep edge with something. And then I was reading this book by Dan Harris, 10% Happier, and he gets into mindfulness. He's the CNN TV person. And he used a very similar line. He goes like mindfulness is not about being a hippie or listening to John Tesh music. So he used the exact he used a very similar line. So I'll have to give him credit for that. But so what do you think is the greatest challenge for mindfulness in terms of getting this into an organization?
Okay, well, getting it in. First of all, I think, Tom, you bring up an important point, is that so quickly we turn things into fads, and then it's, you know, sort of the flavor of the day, and everybody jumps on it, and there's a sort of superficial sort of, yes, let's all do it. And, you know, mindfulness, as I'm sure you and I have spoken about, it really changes your life. You know, it makes you more engaged with each moment, and a whole lot of benefits come from that. But to answer your question, how to get it into an organization, it's as always, you need commitment from the top, and you need some sustained commitment. Plus, what helps, which is what we do at Northeast Delta Dental, which is so marvelous, is that not only is there an opportunity for the employees to come to this open every 2 or 3 weeks discussion, participate in talking about mindfulness and meditation. You know, they also get a blog from me every week. You also write about it in your Team Power internal newsletter. When you have different talks or things, you always insert it in some way or another. So it is sort of brought into the culture in a more holistic way than, okay, this is just a fad. And if one doesn't do that, it really won't take hold. I'll just add one more point, for which I thank you, is that you've really allowed it to be a sustainable program. And sustainability takes time. It's a process. So that's what I would say, is if you want to get it into that organization, you really need commitment. But the payoff is huge.
If you're interested, we won't get that specific today, but in the book, we talk about, in a composite way, employees that have really gained from this.
Right.
So here's a question that I was going to ask, and I want to get it off right off the table. Can you be mindful without being a meditator?
I would say to a lesser degree. I would hesitate to say no. But I would draw the analogy of, you know, can you, you know, become good at any kind of, let's say, running or playing tennis or whatever, without doing exercise, without building the muscle. Now, there are two very, there are more, but just let me say, what meditation does is, one, it really builds your muscle to come back to the present moment. It gives you the opportunity to practice that focusing. The second thing that meditation does is that it gives you enormous self-insight. And that, if that foundation is fundamental to really being mindful. Now, I want to say, of course, that there are many meditation practices. So I always advocate, find one that really works for you. But I would say meditation is foundational to mindfulness.
Thank you for putting that. And also, and maybe you can talk about this, I mean, it doesn't have to, like, I know what I try to do is, you know, 5 or 6 minutes in the morning at the same time and 5 or 6
right.
minutes before
That's
I go home great. To work. Yeah. So when I, you know, get home, you know, I'm present at home. I'm not still, you know, thinking about work. So it's not like, you know, you need to do this for an hour or something like that.
Right,
right. It's more of a routine.
Exactly. A routine they say that, you know, 8 to 10 minutes a day regularly does change everything. And I would attest to that. And by everything, I mean cognitive skills, emotional skills, and most certainly physiology, physical benefits accrue.
And people are discovering that. So again, our book is called Mindfulness, A Better Me, A Better You, A Better World. You can get that at Gibson's. And it's obviously a popular topic, NHTI, although the course is sold out. And NHTI Concord's Community College is actually running some mindfulness series. I should begin in August, and then they're starting up again in October. So welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental and this radio and this weekend of Labor Day, and hopefully nobody is laboring. Again, for my running friends, thank you for turning out for the 10-miler last Saturday and the race to the top of Vermont on Sunday. And those of you who are listening to this on Saturday and Sunday, there's a race at St. Charles, which raises money for the orphanage and the Seacoast on Monday on Labor Day. So with that, back to Professor Burrell. So you kind of touched on this already, but let's maybe let's build on that. So the minimum time and effort needed to really put mindfulness into practice and to have a positive effect. You put out a number like, you know, 8 to 10 minutes. It could probably be more than that too, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. As with everything, the more the better. I would say that what's really important about mindfulness and meditation is the intention with which you engage, and that it is that you take it on with, you know, with purpose, with a personal commitment, that because to really get the most out of it, you need motivation, you need that intention, motivation, and you need self-discipline. And so if you don't in some way make it part of a daily practice, it will never really grab hold. You know, old Malcolm Gladwell, he wrote about the 10,000 hours. I don't think he came up with it, but he was the guy that said, if you really want to get on top of something, 10,000 hours. And there's some truth to that, in that immersion, commitment, time, really, that's what will change the neurons and that's what will change your life, not a sort of flippant half here and there. So even as if it is only, I don't know, 8 minutes a day, it's 8 minutes a day. It's great.
And it's worthwhile. And you had mentioned in the first half of the program that in addition to coming into Delta Dental and your articles and our newsletter, that you also do regular emails. And
right.
One of the ones I speak, I kind of use this line, have you lost your glasses for the 10th time? And then you segue into part of that as being, you know, multitasking. And let's get into that too, because the neuroscience behind this, like we all think, you know, like we're answering an email and talking to a customer at the same time, and we're thinking we're being, you know, more efficient, when in fact we're being less effective and probably doing some sort of, your mind's going kind of topsy-turvy while doing that. So tell us about the what the benefits from a neuroscience perspective.
Sure. Well, first of all, one of the biggest payoffs that you can get fairly quickly with mindfulness is that it slows everything down. And it slows down one's reaction to stimuli. So it's the time between stimulus and response is delayed, giving you that space in between to make a choice. So instead of being reactive and being maybe triggered or going into fight, flight, freeze mode by getting angry or irritable or anxious or whatever, the mindfulness practice slows that down. And from that, one gets a lot of, let's say, physical benefits. Let's start with the physical from a neuroscience point of view. First of all, by not being reactive and being making conscious choice, we can change the pathways in our minds so that we aren't as reactive in the future. In other words, we start creating new pathways and new synapse connections. And that then makes us less reactive. And because we're less reactive, we're not, you know, we don't have cortisol and adrenaline pumping in our system as much. And that, of course, helps our whole physiology. So our brain is being wired. Our physiology is changing. Our heart rate is going down. Our amygdala, which is the limbic, you know, part of the limbic brain, is not so stressed. And what they've found is that over years, the limbic brain actually will decrease in size. So there's a kind of reinforcing loop here. So that's just one of the, I've mentioned several, but the stimulus, the slowing down process creates this change in one's physiology, which then, because one's less reactive in the future, it starts to build on itself. And bit by bit then, what we find, and I'll stop after this, is that we become more resilient. In other words, our tolerance level for not being triggered, not being reactive, whatever, increases, or let's say our intolerance for matters that, you know, get under our skin decreases. And that then, I've only just talked about the neuroscience, the little piece there, but you can imagine then what it does for our emotional intelligence and our relationships. So that's just one really big piece. Now, there are lots of other neuroscience benefits, but I didn't know if you wanted to comment.
That was great, and I think we've seen it in our companies, practical examples. We've had, you know, employees whose home life was starting to get upside down and either financially or otherwise, and started to practice mindfulness that got their act together at home.
Right.
And then, of course, for those CEOs out there that are maybe scratching their head thinking, well, this may or may not be for me, there's an economic benefit, because all these very same employees whose home lives improved, they come into the office now with a hop in their step, they're better employees, and it's just a great relationship. I also like what you were saying. I read this once, and it made sense on this topic. Pause to move faster. Pausing while remaining engaged in action is a counterintuitive step that leaders can use to create space for better judgment, original thinking, and speedy, purposeful action. So it's counterintuitive to pause to move faster. It's kind of like what the famous basketball coach John Wooden said. And so now here's our part where we're going to say to folks, okay, my business leaders that are out there, that we know that about 1 million workers are absent every day throughout the country due to stress, and reports suggest that stress results in about $300 billion of lost productivity in the year. So Would you say that meditation can combat workplace stress? And if so, then isn't it even if maybe as a CEO I didn't totally believe it, from an economic perspective, it makes sense?
Oh, totally. Totally, Tom. It does reduce stress. I mean, as you mentioned, your people at Northeast Delta Dental talk about it. Other places where I'm, you know, talking about mindfulness meditation or teaching, that's the first thing that people say, is that slowing down reduces the stress. And you're right. I mean, how many problems are there at work because we're anxious, we're stressed, we're not paying attention. We see the glass half empty instead of glass half full. We, you know, snarl at our coworkers. And back to the multitasking, you know, we're not present. So then we're always chasing our tail because we can't remember what was it that they said. Did they want 10 or 15 or what time was it? And so we're always catching up. So just that slowing down in itself. So I agree with you. I can't imagine why CEOs wouldn't want to bring this into organizations.
And there are a lot of studies now which suggest that practicing, you know, meditation and mindfulness actually has a longer lasting effect on reducing stress than vacation. This leads to this question, is there any downside with regard to meditation and mindfulness? And the only one that comes to mind for me was, yeah, if certain people might make a fad out of this. That's the only thing I can think of. But other than that, I mean, it's as powerful as, you know, we write in this book. But from your perspective, is there any downside?
No, I wouldn't say it's a downside. I would say what can happen in meditation is that it can bring up some things that maybe one hasn't dealt with before, because the whole idea behind mindfulness and meditation is to give space to yourself, to give space, and not only give space, but to be more present in relationships. So the first relationship, of course, is to yourself. That's why mindfulness builds self-awareness, is because in those moments where you're quiet and you drop into yourself, you learn about yourself. You suddenly realize in this present moment, oh my gosh, I'm feeling this. Why am I feeling this? Where did that come from? All of a sudden, you're really present and out of your mind and in your body. Now, that can bring up some issues. And that's why I always say to people, suppressing those issues and trying to push them away is not a good idea. And therefore, when it's appropriate, if you feel that those issues are starting to overwhelm you, then, you know, go for help. That's the only, let's call it downside. I wouldn't say it's downside, but It does open the envelope, you know. Meditation just peels back the onion bit by bit, and I can't say more than that. Hopefully one can pace it.
And as I say to anybody that will listen to me, if you're not healthy physically and mentally yourself and have your act together, you're ultimately, if you want to be a servant leader and give back to the community and things like that, you can't do that if you're struggling yourself.
Right, so absolutely.
We all have to remember that. And
right.
So thank you for all you've done to educate me, number one. Number two, getting our employees engaged, and also, you know, putting out a fabulous book, Mindfulness, A Better Me, A Better You, A Better World. I know we just touched on this and we don't want to be guilty of, you know, a soundbite, but I would encourage people to get this book. You can get it at Gibson's or on Amazon, and get in touch with Professor Burrell if you're interested in having her come to your organization to spread the word on it. Thank you, Annabelle, for joining me this weekend.